thrives on knowledge and intuition. One man has consistently defied odds, challenging the status quo, pushing boundaries and guiding us into the depths of human wisdom. This man, known to us only as Ken, has been the guiding light in a labyrinth of confusion, the harbinger of discernment in an era of information overload. For years, he has ignited minds and sparked countless debates with provocative questions and thought-provoking answers on the show that redefined the way we perceive our reality, Ken's Think Tank. Season after season, Ken and his guests have unearthed truths, unraveled mysteries, and inspired us to think, question, and wonder. But all good things must come to an end. Now, the shadows of the final curtain begin to loom as we brace ourselves for the grand conclusion. The stakes have never been higher, the questions never more profound, the answers never more essential. This is the final frontier of enlightenment, the ultimate pursuit of knowledge. Get ready to embark on the last journey into the abyss of the human mind, where every episode will strike a chord, every revelation will resonate deeper than ever before. Prepare for the explosive culmination of a saga that has held us in its grasp, leaving us thirsty for more. It's not just a season, it's the end of an era. It's the final call to those who dare to challenge conventions, break out of the mold, and unravel the tapestry of existence. This is the final season of Ken's Think Tank. Dive in as the final chapter unfolds and the legacy of Ken continues to inspire, question, and ignite thought. One last time, let's tank up our minds and think. Okay, let's lighten it up a bit. That was a bit dramatic. Yes, this is the last season of Ken's Think Tank. This project began as an idea, an old GoPro camera and a headphone boom mic taped to the roof of my truck. It quickly evolved into a full production with a lot of really cool guests. But the world keeps spinning and changing, and we must change with it. Ken Collins Marketing, the parent company to Ken's Think Tank, has outgrown the show. While it has been one of the most fun things I've ever done, after 7 years, it's time to end on a high note. This is one of the 10 final episodes. I've reached back to my collection and pulled out 10 episodes to feature in no particular order. Can you guess who will be featured in our final episode when the series ends in late October? Comment below and let me know your guess. First up from Season 2, Episode 4, Mario Bernadoni. I became quick friends with Mario through shared backgrounds and absolutely had to put him on the show. Though this episode was shot 5 years ago, to this day it gets daily views. I laughed more with Mario than with any other guest. Enjoy! I wanted to pick a special car for my special guest today. I thought about it and thought about it. Since I couldn't find an Italian car, I went with a Mini. It's European, has way more packed into it than you think. It's fast, it's fun, it has a lot of heart, and it will definitely put a smile on your face, just like Mario. I've known Mario Bernadoni since he opened his first restaurant on the west side of Farmington many years ago. We've talked some since then, but we've never had the chance to really sit down and chat it out. He's busy, I'm busy, but the time has come. I want to find out what causes a structural engineer from Massachusetts to move to Farmington, New Mexico and open an Italian restaurant. What path in life leads to that decision? I'm so glad he did, because I love his food and his company.
There are lots of things I want to know, but mostly I just want to know what happens when you stuff two highly caffeinated, somewhat crazy men into a tiny car all morning. That has to produce some laughs. Something good's on the menu here. Want to see how it goes?
Come along for the ride in Ken's Think Tank.
So we ready?
Ready.
So we just picked you up from your restaurant.
Yes.
It is called, Sam, I'm pronouncing this correctly, right? Is it Trattoria?
Trattoria, actually.
Trattoria.
Yeah, Trattoria okay. Is the Italian pronunciation. I do say Trattoria.
Okay.
Trattoria. Sometimes I mix it up.
Okay.
Trattoria di Bernardone.
Perfect. Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
What would you like?
I'm going to have a double espresso.
Double espresso.
Okay.
And I'm going to do a mocha.
Mocha what size?
16, no whipped cream.
You want me to pay for this,
Kevin? No, I got it.
All right, well,
you're my guest.
Cover this and we'll go to lunch at my place. I know a good place.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. We just botched the whole thing. Yeah, the coffee. Wait, is that the theme of the show? Like you know, I don't know how to use it. Like elves, they could probably work these things. Oh, shoot, I'm in trouble. This whole setup is magic. Why am I in a car getting a coffee? This is out of my routine. I'm still ready for another double espresso. It actually slows me down.
Double espresso? I don't want to go to sleep.
Exactly.
You were born and raised in Massachusetts. Massachusetts.
Yes. Italians that immigrated into the United States, they came into New York.
Right.
And then the overflow went north and south from there. And my grandfather, when he came over in 1910, had a job opportunity, and that put him a couple hours north of New York City.
Cool.
And so that's how we settled in Massachusetts. My grandparents, were born in Italy, and a lot of my father's sisters and brothers were born in Italy, but my father was born in New York City. He was the sixth of seven in the family, so okay. He was born in America. Of course, he grew up speaking Italian to the degree that he felt left out in America. He wanted to become Americanized very quickly.
Right.
So he would go home and say, "Hey, Ma, why we don't have hot dogs and hamburgers like everybody else?"
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, he had it. When he was young, he wanted to become American. And when he was older, he treasured his Italian roots. And so I felt that that connection.
I think that's normal. I think when you're a kid, one of the most important things for you is to fit in. And so if you're living in America, you don't know anything about tradition and roots and all that kind of thing. You just want to fit in. You want to be like your friends, like the people that you're hanging out with. And then once you become an adult, you realize the importance of those roots and
the heritage,
and the tradition, all that. So
that's exactly true. My grandparents, they lived in America for 60 or 70 years before they passed away and never spoke English. They lived in their own little Italian community, and they lived like they did in Italy.
Right.
They did the same things. They farmed, they raised animals, and they supported the family very simply.
Huge family.
Yes.
And all living on the same, many of them living on the same street.
Yeah, right? that was a blessing. I thought everybody grew up that way, but
right.
I had four uncles and three aunts on the same street, and all of their families. We had houses one after the other. My grandfather had bought parcels of land, and he set up each of his sons in a house. And so all my cousins grew up on the same street. And that was tremendous because I could walk to my grandmother's house or any of my aunt's houses. And it really explains my body shape. I'll never be skinny because every time I went into the house, any of my relatives, manja, they pinch my cheek. You're getting too skinny. Your mother doesn't feed you at home. All these kind of things. Like, no, my mother said don't eat anything when you go to your aunt's house. No, it was an insult. It was you had to eat
you
something.
You have to.
So I learned that was how they expressed their love and why we...
Right.
I believe in that to this day.
Oh, that is awesome. Your dad was a contractor?
Yes.
And ran a restaurant as well with your godfather?
With my godfather, it, you know, My grandfather was a stonemason. I got to go back to him.
Oh,
because
wow.
All the three boys grew up laying stone and building fireplaces and walls and these kind of things. And then my uncle, who was my godfather, you know, he was always looking for an easy way out. He thought cooking, and that's what he enjoyed doing. And so he gravitated towards being in the kitchen. I think from his military experience. He was probably a cook in the military. And so they opened up a restaurant when I was around 10 years old. My father, got into this thing, and the whole family did. They all pulled together and made their own pasta and by hand. It wasn't, my restaurant, we use machinery, but, they did everything by hand. So it was quite an experience.
That's awesome. And so you also worked with your dad sometimes as a contractor.
Contractor work. I thought I would take over his building business, actually. Okay. When I was 18 years old, I did really well in high school, but I wasn't motivated to fill out the applications. I was a procrastinator. And so I was swinging a hammer in the summer between high school and when I should have gone to college with a 4.0 and really high marks. And I never applied to any school. And it got to the point where my father was, saying, you ought to go to college. I don't know why you're wasting your time swinging a hammer. And so I finally got myself to college, and that was a good situation.
You know kung fu.
Yeah, I studied martial arts. Yeah, see, it's
some
a crazy thing. I studied Shaolin kung fu for a couple years under a Chinese master. It was so bad. I was his only student. He could barely speak English.
Yeah.
And some guys from the New York Chinese mafia came up to give him an ass kicking. Can I say that on Ken's TV?
Yeah.
I don't know. And my martial arts instructor was so good. He put six guys in the hospital.
Dude.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. He was about 5'5", but he was he was serious.
So you also know how to play guitar?
Yeah, a little bit. I don't play that often anymore. I have these small hands, and that was always an impediment for me.
I never thought about that. It would be difficult.
Yeah.
More difficult with smaller hands.
But I overcompensate with effort, I guess.
Yeah.
And had a great time with it. It's been a good, it's always been a therapeutic thing for me.
Yeah.
To play some songs, sing some songs, write some music.
So at some point, you ended up being an intern with General Dynamics.
Yes.
We're doing what there, exactly?
I was a structural designer for a summer, and my superior said, you got to design this mezzanine, which is a second story level floor system that would support some warehousing. They wanted to store some things.
Okay.
But I made the guy miserable because I kept asking him, well, what's being stored up there? How much does it weigh? How big is the area? And I asked so many questions that he said, I'm going to get somebody over here to take you down there so you can look at it and you can figure all that out and just finish this design. So I was a thorn in his side, which I can be. Anyway, this gal who was ranking, and I don't know what her rank was in the Navy, but she was a Spitfire. She picked me up, and we go for this ride in the forest of Connecticut. And anybody who's been back east, there's lots of trees there.
Yeah.
And we're on these little back roads. I didn't even know where we were going. And we show up at this little red schoolhouse. And I'm like, this is a Navy facility? But then we go in past the gate, and she had to use all her credentials to get through the doors. It was like, get smart.
Yeah.
I didn't know where I was going. I'm down two floors, and this thing opens up underground, and I'm in this room where the Seawolf 2 prototype is.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this thing, and it's like Star Trek. I mean, it was way ahead of its time, and I'd never seen anything like this.
And you're like, are you going to have to kill me now?
Exactly. Do you know I'm a student intern and I don't have any security badge?
What am I
doing here?
Is this what I get for being a thorn in this?
Yeah, exactly. So it was funny. She's like, even the Admiral hasn't been here yet.
So were you doing that while you were in college?
Yeah, when I was getting my master's degree, I worked for a summer for General Dynamics.
So you were at, you got your master's from the University of Rhode Island.
Yeah, that's kind of strange because when the chair of the department ran into me and when I was taking a summer course,
mm-hmm.
he said, hey, Bernardone, You want to get your master's degree? And I thought he was talking to the wrong guy because I had, you know, I had plodded through my undergraduate degree with some, you know, I didn't do real well in the first few years. I didn't know how to study. And then I did really well my last couple years, and they saw some potential in me, which I didn't see in myself. And so when they asked me to get a master's degree, I thought, you know, either everyone else had refused or they made a mistake. and so I accepted. I didn't have a job, and I became a teaching assistant. It was really, really tremendous to go through that.
You went to California in, what, 89?
I went in 90... Let me see, it would have been 91.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the California Department of Transportation was recruiting engineers across the whole country. I think they hired 900 engineers in 1 year, a couple years after the Loma Prieta earthquake, where the Bay Bridge, a span had collapsed. Right during the World Series, if people remember watching the San Francisco Giants playing against the Oakland Athletics. That World Series, there was an earthquake. Anyway, they hired 300 engineers from the state of California and 600 from across the country. They were looking for advanced degrees. And when they came on campus at the University of Rhode Island, I signed up and I was lucky enough to get a job. I was working at a Rhode Island Department of Transportation at the time. And they did like a consultant overview.
Okay.
A job, and that wasn't attractive to me. I wanted to be a designer, so when Caltrans came on board, I signed up. So for the state of California, I worked as a bridge engineer designing bridges, and then I also got a chance to maintain bridges and inspect the construction of new structures.
Right.
It was great. But for me, you know, in my self-interested self, I said, hey, I got a chance to go surfing.
Right.
I'll work for Caltrans. I can surf the California waters. So that's why I really took the job.
So contracting, engineer, all this stuff, kung fu, playing a guitar, and you're like, why not surfing too, man? I just keep adding to the resume.
Yeah, I have a problem. No doubt. I don't know what I'm supposed to be.
That's called living life, man.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that is. But it was also pretty fateful going to California. That's where you met Laura.
Yes. Yes.
So how did that come about? And for people that don't know, Laura is your wife.
Yeah.
23 years now?
Laura's my wife for 23 years. Nice. We have nine children together. So we better make it work, right?
No.
But Laura is the best part of my life. You know, I met her in a prayer group. I decided to, curtail on my wild lifestyle. I was riding a motorcycle and, you know, living life large and decided to slow down a little bit. And I joined a prayer group and I met my wife. And, you know, it was an experience where, you know, it was an epiphany, I guess.
Yeah.
That this was the girl for me and there would be no other. And so, you know, I was happy that she... could see through my many faults.
Those are the ones that you end up with.
Yes.
The ones that see through your faults.
Exactly. You know?
I guess that your faults don't define you.
Exactly right. That's a good way to put it, Ken. You're so positive.
They're the flavor. They're the spices.
The enhancement. That makes me who I am.
We're all just a hunk of meat. We've got to add spices to that, and that's what makes us who we are.
That's the flavor.
That's the flavor. So while you were in California with Laura, you guys had a farm. Five-acre farm?
Yes.
Grass Valley.
Yeah, at the time, you know, as an engineer, I had a routine schedule. I knew what my budget was, and I had a lot of free time, and so we worked really hard to develop an independent farm that we could survive off of, basically.
And so that people get a grasp of that, we're not talking about a couple tomato plants.
Oh no.
And a pumpkin patch.
No.
No.
We had a 75-foot by 75-foot fenced-in garden. We had 9-foot tomato plants, stalks about 2 inches in diameter that I used to cut down at the end of the summer with a chainsaw. I mean, it was serious. We were canning everything, drying things. We were making our own prosciutto from pork quarters. We had rabbits. We had chickens. We had goats. We had fresh eggs. We were making our own cheese from the goat milk. I mean, we had fish in our pond. It was a tremendous little farm.
Wine?
We would make our own wine. Yeah. We had a 300 vine vineyard. Yeah. We had an orchard that had nuts, pistachio nuts, almonds. We had kiwi fruit. We had, you know, anything that would grow, basically, I planted. I said, we're going to have some of these.
I like these. Let's plant them.
Yeah. My kids would go outside, and they, you know, they'd go outside. You know, Anthony and Marcelina were like 4 and 3 at the time. They'd go outside and they'd come in for lunch. My wife would call them in and she'd say, okay, I made you some sandwiches. And they'd say, oh, our bellies are full. They had eaten. Their faces were purple and their bellies were full of blackberries.
They're outside.
They were just
chowing down
on the fruit.
Oh, man. You know, if you're going to snack, that's the way to snack.
Oh, it was all natural. It was delicious. And how could they resist those little guys?
And so you're doing the same thing here. You have a farm up in La Plata.
Yeah, it's not quite
smaller.
The same. Yeah, smaller scale. And we don't have the growing season in the soils. But I'm doing my best. They told me I couldn't grow Zinfandel vines over here. And I have a little small... 30 vine vineyard right now that will produce 30 gallons of wine eventually.
Nice.
And, but when I say eventually, I'm 10 years into this thing and and we're not harvesting anything yet, but we don't give up. We keep fighting.
Right.
We will overcome nature.
That's exactly right.
I will persevere. I will have wine.
Very exciting day when you're like, oh, grape!
Yeah.
We
have grapes now, but mostly the birds eat them. We need to do the netting and, we have to get this. I haven't spent a lot of time. To be honest, I planted them. I didn't have irrigation at the time.
Right.
So I've been fighting a few things. Now I have irrigation and I have more time. So I'm going to be able to, this spring, I say, I'm going to have a tremendous garden. But we have donkeys, we have chickens, we have rabbits.
Right.
We like the thought of producing some things off our own property, and I want my children to grow up with that ethic and with that idea that they can do it. They don't have to be dependent.
Exactly. But you came out here when it was 2005?
2005.
So what you wanted to kind of slow down from the California pace?
Yeah.
Which is the reason why moving away from California. But what brought you
to
specifically here?
Yeah. You know, we had 4 children, and we had decided, as beautiful as California is, the geography is amazing, and our farm was incredible. I wish I could have just cut the top of that knoll off. Haul it out here, and captured that weather. But, for us... raising a simple family, we wanted a simple town to match who we were. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know about New Mexico. We didn't, when we first moved here, our in-laws and our relatives are saying, what language do they speak in New Mexico?
Right.
And we're like, hey, if we have to learn Spanish, we're going to do whatever we have to do.
That's a typical East Coast viewpoint of New Mexico.
Yeah. Where is New Mexico? Is that...
Do you have your passport?
Yeah. But what happened was we knew some people in California that moved back home to Farmington, which is, I've heard that story about 1,000 times now, where people leave, they discover the big city, and then they come right back to Farmington.
Right.
The people in this town should be very proud about where they are, because this is a special town in the United States of America. I've lived on the East Coast in Massachusetts, Rhode Island. I've lived in California. I've traveled across the whole country through my years, and I love Farmington because of its simplicity, the fabric of the community here.
Yeah.
And I know you feel the same way, Ken. When we've talked, you're a lightning rod in the community, but you could live anywhere, but why do you choose to live here? I feel that this is the place I belong after all the different places I've been.
You and Laura, 9 kids?
9 children, yeah.
And you homeschool all of them?
We homeschool our kids, yeah.
So 9 kids, you're homeschooling all of them, you run a farm and a restaurant.
Yeah, there's something the matter with us. No doubt. We are not normal. We go to therapy once a week. That helps out.
Do you have time for therapy?
Yeah, we don't really know all of the kids, but yeah. Most of them we know.
Who are
the
you
older
again?
Ones. Yeah. When's your birthday? Oh, shoot, we forgot again. No, it's not like that. Laura's tremendous at remembering birthdays. I don't know how she does it. It must be her phone or something. Alarms these days. But yeah, it's a good life, you know, having this many children around us. And, you know, people say it's not possible to raise that many kids, but, you know, we changed the diapers early on. Now they help us out in the restaurant.
Right.
And we wanted to have a family business. We didn't go into this for ourselves as much as we did for the whole family. Let's do this together. And so that's what we have.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is awesome. You know, as I look back on my life, I'm really pleased at how it's worked out. You know, all the different experiences like you're talking about, they make me who I am. And I hope everybody else feels that same way.
You know, that's part of doing this show is that there are so many people that we see. We may see them every day, and we haven't the slightest clue what they've gone through in their life and the experiences that they've had. And I knew some of yours, and in reading your bio, I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, Jerry, come look at this. Dude. So that's pretty cool. So I like to let people know the interesting characters that are roaming the same streets as us every day.
I'm going to give you a new title, Ken. You are the can opener. Open up the can and get the whole experience of each person.
Yeah, exactly.
That's tremendous.
So
it's
cool.
Like we're blood brothers separated from birth or something.
You're my long-lost brother.
I know. We don't hang out enough.
That's awesome. I really like who you are as a person and just a super interesting guy, and I found out even more interesting than I already thought. And we've had some kind of crossover sort of experiences and whatnot. And so I thought, man, I've got to put him on the show.
Yeah, when Ken says interesting, he really means crazy, and he likes crazy people, dude. Crazy people like crazy people.
Yeah!
They feel comfortable with them.
Crazy loves company.
Yeah, exactly. You're insane, I'm insane. Hey, we're both insane, that's great.
Yeah, and the company can't be normal company because they don't get it.
Hey, you know what? If you get to know anybody, I think we're all a little bit nuts, aren't we?
Yeah.
That's what makes us special and unique.
We're all crazy.
We're a bunch of nuts on this planet. That's why we're trying to go to other planets. Let's get off it. There's too much craziness. Let me go to the moon or Mars.
I'm out of here, Mars now.
I'm going to Saturn. Mars isn't far enough. Well, hey, Ken, I really enjoyed some of this.
Oh, that was so much fun. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Ken's Think Tank is made possible with help from these fine sponsors. Basin Home Health and Hospice, keeping you healthy, happy, and home since 1992. Durango Joe's, with a smile, a warm greeting, and a great cup of coffee. Farmington RV Sales and Service, serving the Four Corners since 1959. I know who you are. I know what you want. If you're looking for print and radio ads, I can tell you that's not what I do. But I do have a particular set of skills. Skills I have acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a godsend for business owners like you. If you hire Ken Collins Marketing to build your website, people who look for you online will be able to find you. But if you don't, they will look for you. They won't find you. And you'll go out of business. KenCollinsMarketing.com